Hello and welcome to Utecast, episode 54. This is Head of School Dan Glass with you once again, recording live here in the Sound Lab at the Brandeis School of San Francisco. A rainy, cozy kind of a Thursday. It's like a misty kind of a rain, and you can see as I walked up here to the Sound Lab, I saw just kids kind of cozied up in their classrooms. It's that kind of a day. So we are going to start today, as we start every day, with a poem. This is a poem. I was thinking this week about the ways that we engage with the world and or turn away from the world. And at one point, thinking about different poets who I admire, who do, I think, a really good job of engaging with the world. And one of the poets who I've shared other work of hers here on the Utecast in the past is Juliana Spahr. Juliana Spahr is she's a really powerful poet of the environment, of human engagement with the environment, impact on the environment. And this is a shorter piece of her. She often does these really big, almost baroquely huge, accretive pieces where she'll, you know, the lines will build one to the next. And but this is a smaller poem of hers called Calling You Here. It's from a book called That Winter the Wolf Came, which I think was a few years back that it came out. And this is a poem called Calling You Here. If you were a snowy plover, you'd be surface feeding. If you were a northern pintail, you'd be continually whistling. If you were a magnificent frigate, you'd be flamboyantly displaying. You'd know what you'd need if you were a laughing gull or a red-breasted merganser. If you were this moment, this world. If you were a clean long rain, do you think I could stand it? Honey, if you were a clean long rain, I'd be there within it. I'd be there with you. If you were pristine beaches and salt marshes, extremely wide tidal zone, shallow near shore waters, I'd stretch alongside you. I'd help you pass by ways that had dissatisfied you. I'd be there with you. I'd be there stretching. I'd be there fetching you, too. But you are not a clean rain, and you are not pristine. But still we are together, extremely wide tidal zone, shallow near shore waters. Do you think we can stand it? If we were a pygmy, scaly-tailed flying squirrel, we'd swing down and bite them. If we were an oryx, we'd use our horns against them. If we were an explosive, we'd explode alongside them. If we came together and laid down in a farmland, if we came together and occupied a grassland, if we came together and departed from ways, if we came together, our reasons be spreading, our waters, our lands, we'd be calling you here. It's a beautiful poem. I love the structure of it. To my ear, a lot of Juliana Spahr's structure mimics some of Whitman's structures with a lot of longer lines, a lot of repeated phrases to open lines. It's good stuff. So this week, I was reading the weekly Parsha, and this week's Parsha is Bo, which contains the Passover story of the struggle between Moses and Pharaoh, or one part of it. It's kind of the latter part of the Passover story between Moses, the struggle between Moses and Pharaoh over the freedom of the Israelites. As a piece of text, it contains scenes and language that are intensely familiar to me, and more than likely, statistically speaking, very familiar to most American Jews, since Passover is the most celebrated holiday in Jewish American life. There are things like the demand to let my people go, the plagues being called down, the return to negotiations in their wake. Parshat Bo also contains what I have found to be one of the most problematic features of the Torah, the notion that God, quote, hardens Pharaoh's heart during the negotiation process. It's an action with many ethical quandaries embedded in it. What, for example, does it say about free will if God is determining our responses to one another, and one that our sages have puzzled over across millennia? Seeing the phrase, I was drawn straight back to my own bar mitzvah preparations. I had Parshat Devarim at the start of Deuteronomy, where the Israelites are now wandering in the desert, the beginning of their 40 years in the wilderness. At one point in the narrative, they come to the kingdom Heshbon, ruled by King Sihon, and ask to make their way through its lands. Again, here, God hardens the king's heart, and then instructs the Israelites to fight their way through the kingdom, leaving no survivors. My 13-year-old self was outraged. What kind of God is this, I asked, to provoke such a ruinous outcome? After my fiery drush, I worried that I'd broken some taboo by asking such big questions. But as a rabbi in the community reminded me, such wrestling with God is the definition of Jewish practice. Or as we put it in the Enduring Understandings of Judaic Studies here at Brandeis, which you can find in your family handbook if you don't know where to look for them, there are many legitimate ways to think and talk about God, including questioning God's existence. Frankly, though, such ruin in the Torah and in the world around us still outrages me. It can be easy at times to want to turn away from it all. When the catastrophes pile up, as they did this year, this past fall, when public figures over and over again show themselves to be small-minded or misogynists or bigots, when the world we have built for our children seems to teeter on the precipice of irretrievable failure. I find myself in these moments turning straight to the book review in the Sunday Times, studiously avoiding the front page. Or I'll read a lot of blogs on basketball analytics. It's all my version of averting my eyes. One account of the encounter between God and Pharaoh says that God only finishes what Pharaoh began because Pharaoh responds to the first five plagues by hardening his own heart. Rabbi Danya Rutenberg has a lovely drash on this topic and how our reactions to the hardness of the world shape our hearts and who we become. In it, she writes, quote, when we make the choice to turn away from suffering, when we engage in the action of walking away from others' pain, we impact our inner life. Our own heart is hardened. We become estranged from the divine and from our own holiest self. True, it's scary to look that pain in the eyes and then to grapple with the feelings of responsibility it might engender in us, but there's a cost to that turning away. I think this is right. Whatever our quarrels with God or the world, as seekers of peace, as pursuers of justice, our work is to remind ourselves, each other, and our children not to turn away, not to harden our own hearts. Many of the poets I most admire insist on bringing the teetering ruin of this messy world into their work. Walt Whitman's Democratic Soul, C.A. Conrad's Embodied Engagement with War, Juliana Spahr, who we began with today, her long lists of dead and dying species, Anne Boyer, whose work I've shared on the Yodcast in the past, and her Common Heart. It is, I think, one of the gifts of poetry to open windows into such engagement for all of us. But this week, my mind went to a different poet, Emily Dickinson, who imagines being blind and then given the world to see. And this is the first three stanzas I think it's a five-stanza poem. Before I got my eye put out, I liked as well to see as other creatures that have eyes and know no other way. But were it told to me today that I might have the sky, for mine, I tell you that my heart would split for size of me. The meadows, mine, the mountains, mine, all forests, stintless stars, as much of noon as I could take between my finite eyes. She ends the poem deciding it is safer to keep her soul indoors, behind windows, closed off. This poem seems an important reminder of the awe we can muster when we choose to look, that we look not just upon the mess of the world, but also its grandeur and what a gift that is to our finite eyes. But unlike Emily Dickinson, I don't think our hearts would split. We can hold it all if we hold each other in doing so. And with that, I wish you all weekends filled with full and open hearts, my friends. Shabbat shalom to any of you listening on Shabbat. Thank you for being with us here this week, and we'll look forward to being back together on the Yudcast next week.